Yes.
Okay, we'll call to order the September 16th Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. The first item is adoption of the agenda. I'm going to recommend that we amend the agenda on a couple things. First of all, we need to elect the vice chairman, and so I would recommend that we put that first.
You are no longer muted.
We do have a number of people here that are interested in the applicant or application for the planning and zoning alternate position. And we also have somebody from Duke present on the phone. So I would recommend that we do the election of the vice chairman first. Then we talk to the Duke person. Then we do the interviews before we get into old business. So kind of in that order of one, two, three, and then we do old business. So that's my motion for the amendment of agenda. Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. So first item would be adoption of the minutes. We had to do that last time before we do these sort of things. So is there a motion to adopt the minutes from July 1st?
They were long reading, but I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes.
A second.
Okay, it's been motioned and seconded. Is any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next item is the election of the vice chairman. So,
as with the HPC, I'll make a motion to nominate Ken as our vice chair.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Again, thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Next item is Duke. So do we have somebody on the line from Duke?
Come. I don't know which one they are.
Alec Winslow.
Are you on your phone?
No. Alex, if you're on the line,
say need the star six.
You need the star six to unmute yourself, and the commission's ready to speak to you.
Can you guys hear?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, thank you again.
You guys able to hear me now?
Yes, we can. Yeah, we can hear you. I know there's a little bit of a delay. So again, my name is Craig Galbraith. I'm chairman of the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we invited you in today to talk about some utility issues. So I'm actually going to turn this over more to Ken, because Ken, you've kind of started this. So I'm going to turn this over to one of our P&Z members to kind of organize the discussion. Ken, so Ken, please continue.
Alex, thanks for calling in. Appreciate you. We have a 10-year plan that we do, and part of it is been on there for the last two plans. Is the looking at putting utilities underground for reliability purposes and aesthetics. We started talking to a couple of the contractors that. Just informal, just phone calls that actually do the underground burrowing. And the first thing they told us said, well, you've got to go to Duke and have Duke provide us, or provide you, for the town, the amount of cable and the types and other specifications so we can give you a price on what it would cost. So we started off by saying, okay, let's call with Duke and find out what it is. The thing with it was the 10-year plan. We think if we put it in there, that's a goal. We ought to have a financial number with that so we know what we're looking at. So that's the point where we actually started pushing this. So that's Tony is another member who is much more technically inept at the electrical part, so he'll answer more of the technical questions that you have.
And Alex, this is Tony Garibay. I guess starting out, it's kind of just the high level overall, the kind of an overview of how you would approach this with other municipalities, and how can we implement some of those ideas from a high level strategy for the town.
That would be the starting point, yes.
Okay. I hear there's a little bit of delay, so bear with me. But written down a process breakdown of how we typically handle this in the city or town or municipality. So I'm trying to summarize this line item for you guys. You guys just need to determine what areas that you have interest in converting, and then send that information to the engineer to do, and that is Patty Collard, and I currently, we work for the Afghan Design Engineering Group out of the Wilmington office off of a military post. So once you guys give us those areas that you're interested in, we would come up with a ballpark estimate for this section, and we would do this using historic costs from other projects. And we'd also look at those areas just to see if anything jumps out of us as, you know, maybe out of the ordinary that might have a little bit of cost, and to determine rough cost for those areas. After we gave you a rough cost estimate, that would give you an idea of, you know, what kind of funding you need in order to start the grant process. And after that, once you guys secure the funding,
I'm not sure if we lost you.
Then you could, yeah, sorry, my phone tripped out for a little bit there. But after you guys were able to secure the money, secure the grant money, then we would be able to draft up an engineering deposit agreement where you guys would pay 5% of that total ballpark cost and sign the agreement letter. And that will allow us to do a detailed engineering study and give you a cost that, you know, you can base on and get accurate. Once we agreed upon that final cost, then you would just sign another agreement letter for that final cost, and that will allow us to start construction.
And I guess, Alex, some of the things that, you know, questions that I have is guidance around, you know, right of ways from, and things such as how do you handle, once you go underground from the pad-mounted transformers to the homeowner, and just kind of these questions that'll pop up. So we kind of have a good understanding of other costs that may be out there. I know that burying the utilities, getting the poles out, burying the, you know, the transmission lines, and distribution lines there, but there's also going to be additional costs from the transformers to the homeowner. And traditionally,
that's correct.
How is that cost, you know, how do you, I guess, you know, what we're trying to figure out is how do we, you know, work through this from, you know, beginning to end, what, you know, other costs, how do other towns handle that, you know, any, you know, funding grants or ideas around how other towns pay for it. And you guys have worked with many other municipalities and have, and we see how they would do it. And so I think anything there would help us, you know, kind of get started.
Okay, yeah, as far as I'm kind of just on the engineering side of things. So we usually tell, you know, the town managers to reach out to other town managers that have done a project like this recently. For instance, Elizabethtown just completed a couple of phases along Broad Street. So Pat Devine was the town manager for the project, which I think he's since retired, unfortunately, but he would be a good contact to see how he was able to obtain the grant for that. And then I worked with also Tim Owens at Michael Beach, and he handled some of the work for Carolina Beach as well, so he's in a good contact. But that's typically what we recommend for information as far as grants go, just reach out to some of the other type of contacts, which I'm sure you guys already have all of that contact information. But there would be costs associated with services you know, houses and businesses, and that may require hiring an electrician for the full project in order to, you know, address any concerns that come up as far as replacing meter banks or connecting the new underground lines at the point of lift. So usually it's best to hire an electrician for the full project. It has to cover that. If you have one customer that decides not to pay, then it can hold up the whole project.
Right. And things such as surveys and easements and right-of-ways, I know those will come up, and then, you know, thoughts and ideas. Is that something Duke would help us with, or we would have to work with a consultant or something along those lines?
That's something that we can help you with. I think that would probably come a little bit more into play as we got our detailed design in order to do exactly what the house we're going to proceed with or try to proceed with, and we could, you know, write the easement, and we may need to get an encroachment from the DOT if we require crossing, you know, the roadway or something like that in order to serve a customer or in order to cut our bulk fees. Well, so yeah, that's definitely something we could work with you as we go along.
And I'm going to ask another question. You know, when Duke works with some of the towns and municipalities, does Duke see this as a cost savings opportunity by going underground, or is it just, you know, is there an advantage for you guys to have a town with underground services?
There have been studies done about that. And from an outage standpoint, it does help with reducing outages and helping with the reliability of the area. Because, you know, if a hurricane comes through, of course, you're going to be in a better position with all underground facilities. But over the long run, as far as cost goes, it comes out roughly the same because it's so much more expensive to work on underground infrastructure. So it, you know, it's a lot cheaper to replace a pole in a span of life than just to have to dig up the conduit and repair cables. So over the long run, it's probably roughly the same in our eyes, but you would see some reliability benefits.
Can I, because this is difficult to on this medium, can we, I guess John's got your phone number, can we call you?
Yes, sir.
Can we call you, and Tony and I can come up with a time, to, since you're down at Mayfair, you say?
Oh, yeah, we typically work out of the office of military cutoff and
if we can come up with a time, can we come down there and visit you, and we might even have looking at the first section that we would want to look at after we talk to... All right. Well,
Tony, that sounds good.
All right. So what we'll do is we'll thank you, number one, and I did really, this information is helping us a lot. And the next step is we'll give you a call and do an in-person face, well, an in-person with mask face, and then we'll keep the process rolling until we see if it's not invitation to us or it is.
I did have one question. This is this is Craig Galbraith. I did have one question. Looking at your steps that you just went through, once we define the areas, the second part is you would provide us kind of a very broad cost estimate. Is there any cost to the town of getting that original broad cost estimate?
No, the original broad cost estimate, we're basically bringing it down to a per foot cost, and then we might, you know, we see that there's something out of the ordinary. We might add a little bit from that, but it's going to be a quick estimate, and there wouldn't be any cost to the town for that, for us to provide those.
Okay. Second question I had is that, you know, obviously the smaller the area, the less the cost, you know, and most of these sort of things probably be paid out of grants. From your experience, is there any benefit to maybe looking at a larger area rather in terms of getting grants, rather than trying to do small piecemeal? Because if someone's going to provide a grant, they might provide only one to the town, and it might be better to get a much larger area than a smaller area. From your experience, do you have any kind of insight as to how we should approach the grant process?
I haven't heard of benefits as far as that goes. I know that there's been plans in the past to try to convert, like all of Wrightsville Beach or other larger areas, and they typically end up doing small extensions because of cost. But I mean, I don't know if that would answer that question. Your question. Maybe one of the other town managers could better address that for you.
I would say a related question to that is there any efficiency in scale? Like, does it make much more sense to do it as a big project, or is it really just work out the same if we break it into a lot of small projects?
Yeah, there's not a huge benefit to scale. And I will say that we have a minimum distance of 1,000 feet for our engineering manual, just because we can't go up and down and up and down and up and down. We do have that 1,000-foot minimum. But I don't know if any, huge benefit to doing a real long section versus, 2,000-foot section.
Thank you.
I'll get at the end of our session, I will get the number from John. Give you a call in the next couple of days and see if we can set something up.
Okay. That's good. And my co-worker, Patty Pollard, she was having a little bit of technical issues. I think the call filled up or something like that. So I'll ask her to do it on that meeting. And she was just having some issues connected.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think you've answered all our questions, and we'll have Tony and Ken get a hold of you directly. Okay? Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, next agenda item, you said that, is there anybody else on the phone right now?
There are. You have your text amendment, April and Sherry.
Okay, so they're on the phone, but we don't have just general anybody for public comments, you don't think?
You may want to ask.
Okay, is there anybody on the phone now here for just a general public comment that is not related to any of the other agenda items that we have on the agenda for tonight? Again, we're trying to move kind of quickly through a few things here. So if you're already on the agenda for the text amendment or anything else on the agenda, we'll get to that when we get to that particular agenda item. But if there's anybody on the phone, just for general public comments, please dial, what is it?
Star 6.
Okay. Hearing none, the next item that we have that for the amended agenda is the interview for the alternate applicant for the Planning and Zoning Commission. And so I know there's a couple folks here for that. So again, we've done this many times, and this has to be a public process in terms of everybody has to be here and available for the interviews. I know several years ago we used to do private interviews. We were told we can't do that, that it has to be public. So that's just the way it is. So probably the best thing to do is we do have a list of folks here, and if it's okay with the commission, what we do is just maybe just go down the list in the order that I have here, and then probably just maybe have the candidate give maybe a 3 to 5 minute introduction to themselves and why they might want to be involved in the planning and zoning, and then we'll open it up for questions, if that's okay. So, first person is Mr. Dugan.
Thank you for having me. My name is James Dugan. I live at 829 Cutter Court. My wife and I moved here in 94. And best decision we ever made in our lives, even after the first hurricane. I'm here applying for the alternate position, and I've served a number of years on council, so I have a rough idea of at least some of the background with the issues that continue to keep coming up over and over and over in front of PZ. The main focus that I have as far as applying for the position, at least that I learned when I was on council, was one, that outside of council itself, this committee has the most impact for good or evil on the community as a whole. And I'm still interested in what goes on, because I really enjoy it and love the type of community that we have and the kind of people that we have. And the two big issues really that I see is trying to keep as much of the community like it is that people seem to want it to be, and also help businesses to thrive so that we can get more tax dollars from businesses rather than from homeowner pocketbook. If there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to try to answer them.
Just real quick, this is not the Historic Preservation Commission. Generally, the alternate here for the P&Z, do they serve as an alternate? So they don't. So this is just for the P&Z right now. Okay.
But if there is a resignation, they would move into that HPC.
Right, but you don't come to the HPC, but if there is a resignation from the HPC, then that person would move into both commissions, the HPC and the Planning and Zoning. The only difference is you come about a half hour earlier. Okay, do commission members have any questions or comments or anything?
How long ago were you on the council?
I've been off council for about 5 years.
6 years. What do you see the biggest changes from the Planning and Zoning Board in that 5 years you've been on?
All I can say is the historic district was day one when I was on council. Parking was day one when I was on council. The hell we went through to get signs.
Yeah. You look at me for that one.
Basically, I see the community as kind of staying the same, but the lower income people are having a tough time trying to find a place to live on the island. It is changing, and in all places are changing, especially places that on the coast like this.
And what I would like to ask, what do you think about you? Would you fight for the 35-foot limit?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's very little I agree with Dean on.
I have
absolutely no problem having a discussion on B1 being higher than 35 feet. But I'm very happy with the residences being 35 feet.
I just have one question. Of course, Curie Beach is beautiful. It's a lovely place to live. I've served on planning and zoning commissions in California and Indiana and here. Very different communities, and Curie Beach is basically built out. It's an attractive area. I think we have a lot of good ordinances in place to manage that process. So it's kind of a unique situation. What do you see as the major issue in the future, given how Curie Beach currently is, and we don't have a lot of development taking place?
I see it as tear downs and rebuilds.
Okay.
If you can't go up, you just go more expensive.
And that'd be particularly the historic district in terms of managing that type of process, given the regulations in the state to be able to manage it. So, okay.
That and maybe ecological.
The green pathways and things like that?
Seawater rise.
Seawater, okay. Okay.
Things like that.
Any other questions?
I'm good.
No? All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Okay. All right, next person on the list is Beth Burns. Again, maybe the same thing, just to kind of introduce yourself, and then we might have a few questions.
Good Thanks for this opportunity. My name is Beth Ann Burns. I'm a retired attorney. I haven't been in private practice. Most of my career has been in the public sector. I work for a couple state agencies in Ohio and in Arizona. I was the chief administrative law judge. Most recently, I worked for a large nonprofit electric public utility in California. And most of my experience there was in public policy, main policy having to do with the operation of the transmission grid as well as running an energy market. Now, I realize those don't have anything to do directly with planning and zoning, but what it gave me was an opportunity to be extensively involved in developing public policy. How are we going to go about doing these things? There was a process where we would create proposals. We would vet them in-house. We would tear them apart. We would, you know, really consider pros and cons of whatever we were proposing. Then we would make a proposal to the public and ask for input, comments. We would amend. We would reissue the proposal. It was a very collaborative but very open and transparent process. And I think that's very similar to what planning and zoning does. When you develop regulations, there's always some tension between public interest and private rights. And in your forming policy, you're making decisions that affect both of those areas. You want to understand from the very beginning, when you begin to develop the idea, what impacts it's going to have, and what are the pros and cons of what you're proposing versus something else. And I've developed, I think, a pretty good skill at vetting proposals to make sure that when we're putting together a proposal, it would be well understood, we would know what the impacts were, we will have assessed the pros and cons and developed the best possible proposal that we can, issue it to the public and take comments and see. Maybe they'll have a different view. Maybe they'll raise an issue we didn't actually think of. So there's, you know, it's very open, but also very collaborative. And in retirement, I'm looking to provide community service, to give back. And this is something where I think it's a very good fit of my interests and my skill set. And the town of Green Beach.
Okay. Did you mention how long you've lived here?
I've lived here 3 years and four or five months.
I only have one question. I'll then let everybody else ask a question. Again, the same question is that what do you see as the major issue in the future that you think that we would have to be concerned about from a planning and zoning perspective?
I think it's going to be a revitalization in terms of most of the building. You know, we aren't going to have developers coming in and doing some great big development. It would, you know, be planning and zoning and other issues in other types of areas. But what I see here is a process where the town will continually go through like an self-improvement evaluation. You know, are we doing things as well as we can? Are there areas where maybe revitalization is appropriate? Has the population changed or interest changed where we'd like to take a look at zoning regulations? Do they still fit the community as it is today? And I'm not coming in with any preconceived ideas or suggesting at all that, you know, that something needs to be changed. But I see that the community will continue to grow and stay current. I can't see Kiri Beach just sitting back and saying, well, you know, we're built out now, we don't have to do anything. I think we all love the area and we want to make sure that people here really have the best life and get the most that they can out of the town.
Ken, you want to ask your question?
Well, yeah, obviously the 35 foot is always on my mind. I mean, are you supportive of keeping that at for the building height?
I don't have a personal opinion one way or the other. I understand it's actually written into state law.
Yes, yes, Raleigh would have to prove it. That doesn't mean
it would take some effort. I wouldn't object. You know, I don't have a personal, feeling one way or another. But I wouldn't say, well, this is what the state law says, we absolutely have to do that. You know, there's a reason why the town thinks it's a good idea to continue to evolve. Well, then sure, let's take a look at it.
Okay. So, did you spend most of your time as an attorney or working in public policy, or is that?
Oh, I was counsel for the policy group.
Okay.
So I was there in as their legal advisor, but I kind of snuck over into, having opinions about, policy and development and, why are we doing it this way instead of this way? You give me a good reason why this approach is better than this one. And I sort of made them think, and it was a building process.
Right, and one of my daughters has a PhD in public policy from University of Chicago, so it's, when you mentioned that, it just kind of resonated home to me. So spent a lot of time, doing a lot of stuff in Chicago, working with several different political groups there around public policy. So what was when you were doing that, what were some of the more challenging situations you ran into with some of the policies you tried to implement?
The most challenging was the diverse interests that were represented in what we call our stakeholders, which were all the people that participated in our public process. We had individual residential customers who would participate. We had public utility commissions at the state who would participate. We had municipalities who had their own electric systems who would participate. We had state agencies who would participate, who would operate dams and things and were providing hydropower. We had the folks who owned generators who were participating. We had folks who were providing solar and wind energy. And all of those groups had very different interests and motivations. And yet, they abided by the same set of rules. So the challenge was to develop the best set of rules possible that would fit the public interest. Now, everybody wasn't going to be happy, but we always had to feel we had to justify what was in the public interest and balance the concerns of all of the participating parties with lots of conflicts to the best that we could.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask a broader question and just in a very short response, because you're kind of newer to the town, so to speak, and you've got a fresher view from coming outside. Could you just tell me one thing that you think this town does well and one thing that we don't do very well? And it doesn't just have to be planning and zoning, but give me we did well here, we didn't do well here. Just kind of give me a little bit of your thoughts.
Communication, hurricane preparedness, hurricane recovery. I have been absolutely blown away by how the town handles that. You are ahead of the game. There's planning, there's foresight, and then feet on the ground. I've never seen that kind of activity better. I've been really impressed with that. There's not a lot I can say in terms of what can you do better. I had a couple neighbors suggest that sometimes when they call in, they're not quite sure who they need to talk to. And sometimes it takes several conversations till they finally get to the right person. There may be an intake number that you have that we're just not aware of that can then direct the calls. But that's the only thing I've really heard people talk about. And I personally don't have anything to go.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Catherine, you have anything?
I'm good.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next person is Mr. Bill Burness. Is there a Mr.
Bill Dinshaw?
Okay.
He's on the phone, though, but I said you could call in our show.
Okay, is Bill Burnath on the phone? Just go ahead and dial. What was it?
Star 6.
Yes. Nope, I don't hear it, right?
We have someone there. I just don't know if it's Bill or not.
All right. Well, if we're waiting for Bill, let's go to Mr. Jerry Clark. Same, just a quick introduction, and then we'll ask some questions.
My name is Jerry Clark. I've been traveling to Curry Peak since about 98. I've lived here since 2014. The reason I applied is because I saw the Curry Beach News that you needed volunteers. I have no experience compared to the previous two people, but I do live here and I plan on staying here. The reason I chose, or my wife and I chose Curry Beach, because it is family. We don't need to have a canal street flooded in Curry Beach. We don't have that problem. Let's keep it that way. And I'm against anything above 35. Okay. Save that question. I'm very direct, open. I've been in sales for the last 40 years, and I am retired. That's about what I got.
Well, kind of maybe to ask the same question, because I think it's an interesting question, is, you know, kind of build on, you know, what do you think? You've been here for a couple years now. You've obviously had a lot of experience in other communities and so forth. What are we doing well here, and what could we do better from your perspective?
Well, the thing that drew my wife and I to Curry Beach was because it is family. My kids come, my grandkids come, and we enjoy, we don't go OTB. We stay right here. There's a lot of interaction. There's a lot of things to do, whether it's pickleball, tennis, line dancing, you name it. We're not an industrial city. We're a community. That's what I like.
Is there anything we could do better here? I mean, planning and zoning to a very large extent is trying to do things better in the future. So we're very interested in kind of feedback on that.
I guess I walk the beach quite a bit, and I'm always concerned is why are the disconnected, and they're never connected back up. They just sit there, and the big wood pilings are piling up on the rocks down at Fort Fisher, and that's where I live, and I see the wood in the, and I'm sure that's a state issue, but doesn't mean I can't voice my opinion.
Okay.
You said you were in sales as your background. What, tell us a little more about your past work experience of what experience you could bring to our group.
Well, I started out as a microbiologist and became a med tech and decided that I was going to try to save the whales, but there was no money in saving whales if you wanted to have a family. So I went into sales, worked in the hospital, ER, and then when I was sitting in the lab processing some samples, one of the people said, why don't you come down and interview? So I ended up in scientific sales, glassware, where anything that's used in an R&D setting or research or any of the universities in North Carolina would be used in our glassware that was made in the USA.
Corning's
a competitor.
Okay.
Corning belongs in the kitchen.
Kathleen, are you anything?
No, you guys are doing
good?
A great job.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Good.
Excellent.
All right, and it's up to the commission, but what we've done in the past, if I remember right, is we do the interviews at the beginning of the meeting, and then we have a discussion at the end of the meeting. Now, the discussions are open to the public. Obviously, but you know, any of the candidates are certainly able to stick around if you want, but we'll probably have a discussion at the end of our agenda in terms of making a recommendation to council. And what we do is make a recommendation to council, and council approves. So again, I certainly do appreciate everybody showing up. You certainly can stick around for the meeting and the discussion at the end, or you know, we can certainly contact you with the recommendation that we're going to have. But again, we're recommending to council. Council makes the final appointment. So, okay. Is that fine? So if you want to leave, that's fine. If you want to stick around, that's fine too. So it's going to probably be a pretty long meeting tonight, I think, looking at this.
Do you want to ask again if Bill is on the line?
Bill, are you on the line?
Star six.
Star six? No. Okay. All right. Very good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Under old business, we've got review the resident text amendment application, and we've received this for a proposed text amendment. Again, everybody should remember a little bit of the history of this. John, maybe you want to, it's been several months, you might want to kind of remind everybody about how this whole thing came about.
Good evening, Commission. Several months ago, a code enforcement officer noticed two different pools that were located in the setback areas of single-family residences. One was in the front yard and actually was partly on town right-of-way, and the other one was in the rear yard with a small deck-like structure with steps leading up to it, both of which were in the front and rear setbacks. After citing the property owners for what we saw as a violation of structures in the setback, they asked what their options were, and so I went down the options, which there are three. You can appeal a zoning decision to the Board of Adjustments, you can ask for a variance, or you can ask for a text amendment. Property owners decided they wanted to apply for a text amendment, so that's what you've got in front of you guys today. And we received that on July 10th, and followed the process outlined, and that's what you got in front of you.
Okay. Now, you mentioned there are two property owners. Is this both property owners that are providing this text amendment, or just simply one property owner?
I believe both of the property owners got on board with the text amendment.
Now, one of the property owners had the pool, as you said, in the town right-of-way, and that's not relevant to this text amendment.
It is not, and that pool has been removed.
Okay. So we've had in the past a few proposals for text amendment too, and so maybe since you're already up there, do you want to describe quickly what the text amendment proposal involves and what it replaces?
May I ask a question? How long did it take them to move it out of the setback?
They moved it off the town right away in the timeline that they were given. I can't remember exactly what that is now.
More than a day.
It was a pretty big pool.
Either way, they're going to want to put their pool back in this coming summer, which was the reason that they applied for the text amendment in the first place. But getting to your question, did you want me to go over the text amendment process or why it is there?
Probably not the process, but what the actual content of the text amendment proposal
okay.
is.
Well, if you go to page 2 there, you can see that this is a text amendment to Chapter 15.36.010. And the title of that section is Control of Yards and Setbacks. Any building or structure requiring a building permit shall not be permitted in the setback area with the exception of the following items. And if you read the items, I think it's the intent of this section is clear, and that is that we don't want any structures in the setback that would prohibit fire fighting, airflow, and all the other reasons that are outlined in the ordinance for what setbacks are there for. And then the proposed text change would be simply to add a subsection E to that same section that says temporary structures that can be easily removed within a day, including ground and above ground pools, trampolines, and playground equipment. That would be an added exception.
One note, that's actually subparagraph F because the handicap ramps that you all approved is actually E. It doesn't show up in this.
Okay. All right. This is a time, I guess, John, for some questions here. And I know I raised this question when we talked about this months ago. And that's the idea of a consistent enforcement, is that when I think about many of my neighbors, they have trampolines. And there's no doubt that many of those trampolines are in one of the setbacks, whether it's a rear setback, front setback, or something like that. And we haven't really enforced trampolines being taken out of the setback. So the question I have is, if we don't allow pools, why are we allowing trampolines? Or maybe I'm wrong in terms of my understanding of the enforcement issue. But I've always been a big fan of consistent enforcement.
I agree with you, and it's something I've struggled with over the years. And in my mind, two firemen can pick up a trampoline and move it out of the way a lot quicker than they can pick up a 1,000-gallon pool and move it out of the way.
Okay, but technically, in the existing text, a trampoline would not be allowed, even though a fireman can pick it up.
I'll tend to agree with that, yes, sir.
Okay.
The other thing with proposed text is just go on, John, is that within a day, well, the setbacks are there so that if emergency, you can't wait a day in some cases. I mean, that kind of concerns me.
I agree with Ken on that. I think if there's an emergency, they need access immediately, not within a day.
I'm going to provide a little counter to that, and because I look at what already is allowed, ground level apron for a pool. Well, that's up like a 3-foot or a 4-foot apron, I assume. No, it's not. Okay, it's on the ground.
It's ground level.
How about a fence? Fences you can't pick up and move.
No, sir. They're right on the property line, and they grant some privacy to the.
Okay, so that wouldn't affect a fence. Wouldn't affect emergency vehicles.
Emergency vehicles aren't usually pulling into the backyards or side yards.
Okay, that comes to the point I was going to make, is that if we'd argue in a setback, it's for emergency reasons.
Which is also the reason for a 4-foot fence everywhere except for the backyard.
I would think a fire crew can run back through the side or through the back or through that space and not have too much of an obstacle. I mean, a fence is a narrow, straight line, whereas a pool or a trampoline is a big obstruction.
I just struggle with the argument of always calling back on an emergency when I'm not sure. I mean, if you're not going to drive a truck back there, you're not going to drive a fire engine down the side of a house. So I struggle with the argument of emergency as a reason to exclude these sort of things.
I think that the challenge we had in the pictures we were providing was the pool that was in the front of the house that was close to the road, which was kind of a dangerous situation. What if somebody had, you know, coming down the street and ran into the pool or with a car? I think the backyard, front yard are two different things.
Yeah, we may have two different discussions here between a front setback and a side or rear
setback.
Yeah,
the front setback.
Because it just says setback.
The front setback is where they had the pool, and John got them to remove it. And that was definitely something that, if you have kids in the pool, you know, somebody's driving crazy and runs into the pool with a car.
From an emergency services standpoint and access and all of those kind of things, I have a very strong position that I don't want things in the front setback. If we're going to allow something, then it needs to be separated to another viewpoint.
I just want to point out, it's your all's decision, I'm neutral, but there's been a lot of focus on setbacks for first responders. I provided a memo, and I just want to again remind you of the definition of a setback. They are provided in order to provide for stormwater runoff control, health, safety, firefighting, free flow of air. So there are some other considerations besides first responders.
Yeah, thank you.
But we get back to the setback, the front yard versus the backyard. The front yard, I'm like you. I can't see it. I think it's more intrusive. It creates more problems. But the backyard, I mean, there's a lot of things going on back in somebody's backyard, barbecue grill or something there that could be in a setback. A trampoline, I mean, those things can be easily moved. Or I think, in my opinion, you're going to have to look at it front versus back.
Okay, well, that's fine, because I was also reading all the comments. And for example, we have a comment from Mr. Ed Kennedy. From a fire safety standpoint, I do not advocate putting things in the front setback. So he specifies front setback, not side or back. Mm-hmm. And I think several of the other ones which were referring to emergency type of situations, I agree with Mike regarding the front yard setback. So I'm wondering if, and again, I'm thinking the trampolines and all these sort of things, if maybe certain things that are somewhat removable, we should consider to be in a back yards, a back setback, which we would not allow in a front setback.
Just a couple of comments. This is a setback. This is a proposed text amendment that as it's written, applies to all setbacks.
Yes, I know.
In all districts.
Yes, and that's...
So if you're going to start parsing it out one way or another, you're actually... in a sense, asking staff to propose some text amendments, because we'll have to rewrite. For example, the section that they want to rewrite is to control encroachments into all setbacks. So if you start parsing out between front and back, we're going to have to amend the text to get there.
I personally don't think the amendment would be that great. You know, I mean, my own personal opinion is it'd be adding a few words, I think, to the existing one.
Well, we just would have to come back and, I mean, it wouldn't...
I agree with everybody on the front setback, but I just struggle with the idea of having so many people having trampolines and playground equipment in their backyard that I'm sure many of those are in the rear setback, and then saying that we can't let somebody have an above ground pool. I just struggled with that a little bit. I agree with the front setback. I don't want playgrounds in front setback either.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Does a trampoline require a building permit?
No.
Because that's how it's read, control of yards. It's any building or other structure requiring a building permit shall not be permitted in the setback. So that takes care of the trampoline right there, I think.
Well, does a pool require, would that pool require a building permit?
Technically, a pool would from a safety standpoint.
That's a good point, Kevin.
That's a good point.
I think, if I'm reading this correctly, and I think our council's comment cleared that up for me, we have to address this proposed text change as it's submitted and then come back and address anything else as a separate item. So with that said, and with the consensus that I believe I'm hearing from other commission members, this text amendment cannot stand as written because it's too broad and it includes front setback, which I don't believe we are supportive of. So I think our decision would be to disapprove this text amendment and potentially add a future agenda item to discuss potential revisions to rear setbacks or side setbacks.
We do have a couple people on the phone, I think, that probably want to talk about this.
Right,
yes.
One other thing. My concern is with the side set, with the side setback and items in there. I agree with you. In the back, it's but where people have to get quickly between buildings.
Yes.
I consider that just as important as front setbacks.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and we don't have wide, I mean, it's very, very few properties here that can do that, but as far as doing a text amendment that would cover everybody, that's something I would want to consider, that the sides also need to be free of.
So we're going to take a public comment.
Yeah, I wanted to hold off on the public comment because, you know, a lot of the issues that we've been talking about that the folks that are on the phone can think about, maybe respond to what the conversation we've had so far is. And I know we do have a couple people on the phone, so if you want to talk and you're on the phone regarding the text amendment proposal, go ahead and hit *6 and introduce yourself. You're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead and introduce yourself and go ahead and maybe respond or, you know, address some of the issues that we've concerned.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, the name and address.
Okay. My name is Carrie Hearn. My address is 202 Fifth Avenue. We're the ones with the pool in the front yard. And I completely understand and agree with your assessment of not having a pool in the front yard for emergency purposes. And my husband and I are in agreement and are okay with not putting our pool back up in the front yard, because that's not okay with you guys. We went in with the other couple to write the text amendment with guidance from you guys, and if we wrote it wrong, I apologize. We had help from Bethany, right? So without not knowing exactly what I'm supposed to write and the perfect words to say and how to make that exactly what you guys need, I'm not exactly sure how it needs to be said and written, so that from an emergency standpoint, it will sound the right way so that trampolines, pools, and everything can be covered according to the code.
It sounds like...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you know... Again, this is Craig Galbraith. I'm chair of the commission here. It sounds to me that you don't have an issue, I mean, from what you just said, an issue about the concerns we have about pools in the front setback. Would you be okay to have a pool in the backyard?
We would like to put it up in the side or on the backyard, yes.
Okay.
My uncle, Mike Robertson, has also stated that if it's okay, that I could put it up along his property line as well, because he's given me permission. Because our property backs up against each other.
Again,
it would still be in the setback, so it would still have to be okay with your text.
This is a kind of a plastic pool in there. How quickly could it be drained and taken down?
It just takes hours to take down. Okay. I mean, and from an emergency standpoint, it could be chopped down at. It's just an above ground pool.
Okay. Any other
questions? We took it down before in the daytime.
I know.
My mother-in-law and I did.
I know you heard my voice comment on this, Dave Agarso here, and you know, I do think the front setback thing is an issue. First off, I do want to say thank you for submitting a text amendment request. That makes us think about it and go through the process. So don't worry that the wording was not correct. If the rest of the commission here follows what I was suggesting, it would be to disapprove or decline this text amendment, but we would do that with a follow-up action item to look at other alternatives that may be suitable and appropriate for you and for other members of the town.
John, I have a question. You said any pool has to have a building permit that's installed. Is there, where does it not require a building permit?
I think the plastic kiddie pools that are 18 inches tall that you can buy at Maxway's are pretty much not considered needing a building permit, but something that's semi-permanent, such as what Terry had in her front yard, that definitely needs, for no other reason than to make sure that the safety aspect is satisfied there, which is a 4-foot barrier, which a pool height, you know, the sides can act as its barrier, but the ladder would need to be taken away anytime the pool is not in use and right. other similar things like that. And I just want to add one other thing about the text amendment. Mr. Coach said you're spot on. Text amendments are never correct the first time. There's usually some kind of editing that needs to take place. So, Terry, you didn't write it wrong. This is just the way the process works.
John, you've heard a lot of conversations. Yeah. We're talking to John Batson right now because I had a question about the front yard versus the backyard. Given this type of pool, do you have a major concern about this type of pool being in a back, not a side or a front, but the back setback, or the rear setback?
I really don't have an opinion either way. I just want there to be some clarity in the code so okay. that I can direct my code enforcement officer on the correct way to, maintain the code.
Let me ask it another way. Do you see any obstructions to emergency? What are the four different categories, Mr. Eldridge? That
I agree.
Okay.
In order to provide runoff control, health, safety, firefighting, free flow of air, and adequate off-street parking.
Do you see anything in the rear setback that would inhibit any of those categories?
I think if two neighbors that backed up to each other both had a pool and some kind of decking around that pool, no matter if it's temporary, it could be taken down or not, I believe that poses an issue for firefighting purposes, yes, sir. And that just comes from my background in firefighting.
Okay.
The other thing with Woodworth, you'd have to look at, is there a stormwater drain back there? I don't know their property, but that would be another item to review as part of the permit.
Well, I think we have to keep in mind that we're not just looking at one individual property owner either.
Right.
This is going to apply to every property owner in town.
In different districts.
I think with playground equipment, trampolines, that I don't think that's much of a discussion around that. I think that, what's written in this text amendment, I can digest that. It's a pool park, but I think with the pools, that's being, it's being tethered back to the building permit. So if it doesn't meet certain criteria or certain things when they apply for the building permit, then it's not going to be allowed to be installed. Correct?
Sure.
So I think that, with having that already listed here, I think that helps us put clarity to that. With having, meeting the criteria for the building permit. And if it does, then
hi, this is Michael Will, and the other person that's in the text amendment.
Okay.
Thank you for having us and thank you for the amendment. Just to the point of the building code and the permit. The hardest thing about getting an above-ground pool is permit. Won't be permitted.
Yeah, if I could just interrupt there, you're kind of garbling up. Pull the phone away from your face a little bit. Sometimes that works a little bit better because we missed about everything you said. So let's go ahead and try that again.
I'm on a laptop. I can try to dial the number. Give me a second.
Boy, we didn't understand. Did
I? He's on the laptop. He's going to try calling in.
Okay. All right. All right. So go ahead and dial in, and we'll try that differently.
If I could ask a question of Mr. Batson while we're waiting on this person to call back in. The trampoline and playground equipment then not needing a building permit is not really necessary to be a part of this discussion, right?
I think Ms. Zielinski brought up a very valid point. I probably looked at that before, that's why I never addressed it. I don't know.
Okay.
Don't want to take somebody's trampoline away.
Yeah. That's a very, it's a good distinction between the two, as one needs a building permit and one doesn't.
Do we have him calling back in yet?
So as we wait...
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, let's go ahead and start. We missed about everything you said before, so go ahead and start from the beginning.
I just wanted to make comments towards the building permit, just as additive, right? I agree with the backyard. I think that's the way to go. So additive to that, when doing a building permit for above ground pool, the biggest thing that gets turned down is the fact that it's in the setback.
Okay.
Which changing this ordinance would allow you to have that pool in the setback?
Okay.
Now your pool doesn't have decking. Does your pool have decking, or is it just the pool with a ladder going up?
My pool has a small step and deck, mostly for my mother who's 75 years old that can't get up a ladder.
Okay, but this is just a deck where the ladder is, not surrounding the whole pool. Is that correct?
Nope. It's just on one of the smallest sides of the pool, correct.
Okay. Okay, is there anybody else on the phone who wants to address this particular issue? Okay. We're going to go ahead and close the public comment to this issue right now, if that's okay, and open it up to the commissioners to converse and or make a motion. So are there any...
Can I ask one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
If it does end up closing, we do feel on the text amendment, and it goes into looking for you guys to start handling the text amendment, I'd also ask that, like, the levies, the fees of us get having to pull this up are on hold until that decision is made.
Yeah, could you repeat that? We didn't quite get that.
What I'm saying is, if you guys decide to look at this further and discuss a new set of text amendments, that the penalties and fees for me not removing the pool are on hold until you make the decision.
As I said before, this is John Batson. We will stay in enforcement until P&Z decide one way or the other whether or not to consider a text amendment to this session.
Thanks, John. And that's regardless of this specific text amendment, just about the entire idea of the text amendment.
About pools and setbacks, yes, sir.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
All right. I guess we could start. Ken, kind of move down the...
I guess we need to put... it sounds like this needs to be rewritten. Are we going to take that on, or...
Yeah, I would.
What's your general opinion? Because, I think that trampolines and playground equipment, because they don't require a building permit, are not covered under this...
Right. I don't think that's relevant.
This section, anyway...
Well, as long as they're not in the front or side setback.
Right.
It is relevant. If you're going to put a pool in the back rear setback, and that pool requires a building permit, then you're going to have to look at the preface to that code section that says, you're listing it as an exception.
I'm looking at trampolines, then without a building permit, then that's different to the pool.
The
way I see this is very simple, in that the text amendment application as it's written needs to be disapproved. And in making a motion to do that, I think we ought to look at the possibility of allowing pools in the rear setback with, building permits and appropriate approvals.
And you may also want to, I don't know, you may also want to consider what districts that exception would apply to. I don't know if that's a limitation.
No, that would be a very good suggestion. I mean, is there any discussion, or are you comfortable with any moving?
I would agree. My general opinion is that now that I know the trampolines and playground equipment aren't requiring a building permit, so they would be allowed anyway. When it comes to pools, I'm a little concerned if there's a big deck around the pool. You know, that makes it not too portable from a firefighting point of view. I probably don't have a big problem with the pool being in the rear setback. I do have a problem with the pool being in the side or the front setback. But I also think we need to make absolutely clear that a above ground pool of a certain size would require a building permit, would have to go through John's office to make sure that it conforms to code and everything like that. So I would agree to disapprove the proposed text amendment, but I certainly wouldn't have a problem of considering next month in a text amendment that would allow above ground pools that have gotten a building permit to be allowed in the rear setback.
Two questions. Go ahead.
Looking at
specific areas too.
Looking at specific areas.
General.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you mean specific areas, Ken?
District.
You mean district, particular districts?
Yes.
District would you allow it in? What district wouldn't you?
Well, I think we're getting into the details of next month's meeting as well, but we also would have to.
Don't they need to reapply before y'all do anything further?
Sorry?
Don't they need to reapply before y'all do anything further?
No, we can initiate our own text amendment.
Yeah, I think that we're getting into the details of that next step. Obviously, we need to look at residential districts versus other districts, talking about rear setbacks specifically. We also know that those right-of-ways are used for, you know, sewer and storm drainage and other stuff, so there would have to be a section in there for removal of it for access to those things. But I think those are things we can discuss as a planning and zoning text amendment as a new agenda item next month. We don't have to determine those now.
Right.
I think right now we simply need to disapprove the application that was set up and to add an agenda item for this to be discussed at the next meeting.
Can I jump in for a second? Before we leave the chairman's comments, so let me digress. Commissioner Marceau, are you saying that staff does not need to worry about drafting anything, that it will be a discussion item that will direct staff to draft something that you all instruct next month?
I think that we discuss and draft something at next month's meeting.
And getting back, if you do allow the building permit pools, well, that's next month. I'm sorry, I'm thinking ahead too much.
Yeah, I think we're digging too deep into it right now.
You're just limiting this action.
Right. We're limiting the action to what's proposed and just trying to get a sense from the commission about how they feel about going forward possibly with a rear setback issue related to pools. So that's, I think, what we're doing right now.
So
we have two other commissioners that might have comments.
I personally, and I'll be happy to change my mind if somebody can convince me, but I think that if you imagine two homes next to each other that have pools in the rear setback right up to the fence, then you have two pools. Then getting through that area is dangerously impossible. And I think our ordinances are important, and I'm a real black and white person, and it needs to be really bright in order for us to change this. And my gut reaction is that I don't think it should be changed. Okay. And people buy property, and sometimes some of the backyards are smaller than others, and some people just can't have what they want. You know, a couple of years ago, we had somebody wanted an outdoor shower on the side, and they were turned down. Because when you start, fiddling around with that and say, well, poor guy,
I agree that those are valid points. I think that's getting into the next discussion.
Well,
though.
Craig asked
yeah.
me what I thought, so I just gave you my
No,
thought.
That's fine. Because we will have a motion to put this on next month's agenda, so if that motion doesn't pass, then we're not even going to talk about it next
right.
month.
So, but if it does pass, then we can have healthy debate next yes. month as to the pros and cons. Okay.
John, you want to?
I'm just glad Kathleen brought those issues up. It is a daily conversation that I have. I believe there's actually people on the phone right now that they'd like to move their HVAC units and a generator into the setback, and I've told them no at this point. It's a daily conversation. People want to put things in setbacks, from sheds, outside showers, to pergolas, to brick ovens. You name it, they want to put it back there.
And again, we've had these conversations about sheds a number of times, but then I would come back to, are we enforcing, because there are sheds in setbacks in the rear, and we haven't really enforced that we have those people take it out. So
you allow something in a setback, you set precedent for something else.
Yes, yeah. But we need to enforce. So, Tony,
okay.
Go ahead.
But the thing I do like what they did right is temporary, and use temporary structures.
Yeah.
So even though the pool would have to have a permit, it's temporary.
It's temporary.
Okay.
No, so I think we get around, you know, some of the issues.
Yeah.
With keeping that in there.
I make a motion that we decline the text amendment as written, and that we put the item on the agenda for discussion, and that each commission member do their homework, look around town, and see where things would be. Would be pro and con on this for next meeting.
If I could separate that into two motions, let's okay. go ahead and take it that way. The first motion would be.
All right. Except we motion to deny the text amendment as written.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The next item is to put this item on the agenda for our October meeting.
Well, let's back up a minute. It's a Chapter 15 text amendment that was proposed, so we need to consider we need to adopt a consistency statement. In your packet, you have...
Do we need to adopt a consistency statement for a denial?
Yes, sir.
You do? Okay.
Excuse me one second, though. Can we just table this discussion until next month, because the owner has asked that as long as this is unresolved, that he not be penalized. So
three things. One, I think we've already acted on, we've reviewed, and I believe that motion implied a recommendation to council not to approve this text amendment. Because that review and comment has been made, we need to adopt a consistency statement. John can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that gentleman has stayed until this whole business.
Well, that's why I wanted to bifurcate the vote, okay? Because right now we've rejected this, but John said he would stay the fines if we're still in discussion. So if the motion does not pass to put it on the agenda for next month, then that would be the end of it here.
Y'all can, that's fine. I just want to make sure we get a consistent
okay.
statement.
All right. So, but can I take the next vote to put it on the agenda. So this is to put it on the agenda. If it goes on the agenda, then John, you will continue to stay the fines. However, if it doesn't put it on the agenda, then that's it as of tonight. So everybody understands that this is what the next vote is.
We still need the consistency statement
right.
for
we'll
the disapproval.
Right, but we'll deal. But let's go ahead and there's a motion to put, or I'll go ahead and make the motion. Go ahead and make a motion to put the continue the discussion of the text amendment related to setbacks onto our October meeting. Is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay. Okay. If this passes, we'll continue to stay the fines. If it does not pass, that's the end of it tonight. Okay. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Okay. So now the consistency statement.
And before we get to that, I just want to make sure staff has no task
that's correct.
In front of it going up to this next agenda item next month.
That's correct.
That's correct.
In your packet, you've got two consistent statements. The one that's relevant is got disapprove at the top, Just Chase has a clean copy for the chairman's signature. I just want to, just want to review what the findings were. Paragraph 2, the proposed text amendment affects all the town zoning districts. 3, the proposed text amendment could result in obstructions within the setback areas, negatively impacting public health, safety, and welfare, stormwater drainage, and airflow. The proposed text amendment would therefore be inconsistent with the cited sections of the land use plan. And the commission finds that denying the proposed amendment will be reasonable in the public interest in as much as it is inconsistent. Based on these findings, the commission recommends the town council deny the proposed text amendment. If you approve of the disapproval option, then you can entertain a motion to adopt that.
Okay, for the rest of the commission, that's on page 22 of 51, if you're looking for that. Okay. So is there a motion? We've already disapproved it. Now we have to approve the consistency statement. So is there a motion to approve the consistency statement?
Motion to adopt the consistency statement as written by council.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. Very good. So for the folks on the phone, what we've done tonight is we've disapproved the proposed text amendment, and you've heard the discussion that there is some consideration about possibly this sort of thing occurring in the rear setback, but we won't have that discussion until next month. But because of what John has said, since we're still in discussions regarding this, that he will stay any sort of fines or enforcement of the existing code. Okay, very good. It is 8 o'clock now. Does anybody need a break? No, you want to push ahead.
Okay. The chairman need a break.
No, I don't need a break. I'm all pretty. Okay, next is our proposed text amendment to Chapter 8, and this is the light trespass. So this, again, we started before we had our three-month break here, and I know that Mr. Eldridge has done a lot of work in this particular area, so Mr. Eldridge, I'll turn it over to you.
Let's see if I remember how to do this. I've never
been. I got you to the first one.
But anyway, so, can you all hear me okay? Just to update the rest of the commission, the chairman took a leading role in this after our last meeting, went out and did some measurements, looked at some other jurisdictions, and we had a conference by phone where we agreed to simplify the ordinance and introduce a measuring standard that would easily applied.
If I could just jump in, that was a concern that the many people had, that the proposed ordinance that we had last time was too long and complicated, and so there was interest on the part of the several commissioners to shorten it down and make it much simpler to try to understand. So that's the motivation for the second rewrite here.
Chairman and I got together by phone and we came up with a simplified version, and then we made it even simpler. And in your packets, the simplified version is called not abbreviated, and the very simplified version is called abbreviated. And they're not track changes because of our self-publishing act, so I provided in the agenda packets the July draft that we looked at, so you can cross read and see the changes. But let me discuss the changes just very generally. We got rid of definitions that didn't show up in the text of the award of the regulation. We added a new exemption to porch lights. We rewrote the Section E1 general standard, and we, I believe in the abbreviated version, we deleted the rest of the general standard specific situations as well as the special standard specific situations, and that's how we got the very simplified version, which is called abbreviated in your agenda packet. But let's walk through the changes real quickly. Mandy, can you scroll so I can see the top of that page the other way, the other direction? There you go. The title became very cumbersome, so we're going to just call Chapter 8, Article 2, nuisance, rather than each time we add something, add to the title, and then try to reference that title later. Mandy, if you could please go to the first page of Ready. There you go. Findings and purpose, sections 1, 2 were not changed. B, I've already told you, we got rid of definitions that we didn't utilize. Next page. That's fine. If you look at number 12, this is under the exemption section. We've added residential porch lights limited to a maximum of 2 in the front and 2 in the back, provided the bulbs used do not exceed 40.
Now, this is the non abbreviated version you're looking at now, right?
Right, but this will be in the abbreviated version.
They're both the same.
Okay.
And you can see there that we've allowed front and rear porch lights, provided the bulbs are only 40 watts each or LED equivalent. We didn't add anything or delete anything from prohibited lighting. There you go, general standards E1. This is the chairman's contribution, and I think it's more, how do I want to say it, more workable, more friendly, more easily applied than what we had before. You can read it for yourselves. We're adjacent, and Chairman, why don't you speak on this, since this is...
This is under general standards?
E1, yes, sir.
Yeah, E1. What I did, there's a... Since we're not using the reasonable person, we have to have a measurement.
Yes.
And so what I did is I looked at a number of different ordinances that were already out there and see kind of what the standard was in terms of more residential family type of places, not necessarily New York City type of things. And these are the standards that I heard. You know, some of them would be 10 feet, some of them would be 5 feet, you know, that sort of thing. But the standard that I saw many, many, many times in communities like Kiri Beach is that the illumination level should not exceed 0.1 or 1/10 of a foot candle at 5 feet beyond the property line, and in the commercial area, 0.2 foot candles at 5 feet beyond the property line. So we just essentially took that and put that as the requirement.
And then, thank you, Chairman.
Oh, and also many of them, and I actually talked with one or two different managers. I talked to two, actually, on this. And they said that they would strongly recommend, in addition, the second part of that is that you can't see the actual source of the light bulb. Okay, so because they said a lot of times you could have, let's say, like a spotlight sort of thing that may not quite get to that 0.1 foot candle, but it's still shining in somebody's bedroom or something like that. So by saying that you can't see the source of the light, then you don't have to have all this worrying about shielding and all that sort of thing. However they want to do it, it's up to them. If they want to shield it, turn it down so you can't see the source of the light from, that's up to them. So their recommendation is not to, to simplify the whole thing, simply say that that you simply can't see the light source. And that was their solution.
And that last sentence, which is what the chairman's referring to, exterior luminaires, lighting fixtures, which will be visible from residential areas, shall be oriented or shielded so that the direct or reflected light source is not visible. that standard allows us to, in the abbreviated version, to delete all the specific situations that we spelled out in the July draft. We kept some of those specific situations in the non-abbreviated draft, which you've got on the screen right now. For example, the material for light poles, we still are addressing the glare, not so much the lighting fixture. Two and three also deal with the location and the height of pole-mounted luminaires and building-mounted luminaires. And those are the basic changes to subsection E, a broad, easily applicable measurement and a catch-all that prevents the source of the light being visible from a residential area. And I think that that really does address most of our concerns. Subsection F there at the bottom has been removed from the abbreviated section. Again, this is the non-abbreviated that you've got in front of you. Mandy, can we get to the next page a little bit? Let's see. Again, in the abbreviated version, flagpoles, facade lighting, and canopy lighting has been eliminated. And I don't think there are any other changes. If you could get cover the rest of the red ink, I'd like to confirm that.
There are no other changes. I read through compared them very closely today.
So I'll be glad to answer any questions, but that's it in a nutshell.
And let's go to the abbreviated, because this is the shortened.
Yeah,
the recommended shortened version of this.
As I tried to point out, in the abbreviated section, we still deleted the definitions that we didn't use on both drafts. We still kept the findings and the purpose the same in both drafts. We did add the porch light exemptions to the abbreviated draft, as well as keeping the rest of the exemptions in both drafts that were set forth in the July draft. Prohibited lighting remains the same in both drafts as it was in the July draft. Under the general standards, we simply went with that E1 that we just got finished discussing, the 1/10 to 2/10 and the light source not being visible from a residential area, but that's the only general standard we got. In the abbreviated draft, we eliminated the rest of them. In the abbreviated draft, we also deleted all the specific special standards, and then you go directly to applicability to the end, where there were no changes from the July draft in either of the current drafts.
Okay, because I know, Ken, you were very interested in having a much shorter and simpler version of this, and so that's what motivated the abbreviated version. And
shorter.
Much shorter.
Yeah.
Than what we were. I think our first one was like 10 pages long.
Yeah.
And so
I still have a concern of the actual applicant, the citizen trying to look at this and say, what do I do if they have a problem? But I like it a lot better, and I do like I guess what it comes down to, if you think you have a problem, it comes to the complaint investigation, where they will call Mr. Batson, and he will set up a...
At 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. We'll set up an investigation. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's going to be a reactionary ordinance.
Yeah, good. Well, that's what I like. I like that. And I guess you need to purchase your light meter.
And you know, the nice thing about that second part where the source is not visible is you're not defining how it's shielded and all the shielding stuff that we talked about before. It's up to the homeowner. I mean, if it's 40 watts or less, it doesn't have to be shielded. You know, that way they can have porch lights and that sort of thing, that, you know, you drive anywhere,
I
that sort of thing. But
I think David did a great job of getting this here, and I think this much easier for the citizens to
take if they think they have a problem and now understand what they have to do.
Aaron took a leading role in helping to simplify.
And I mean, obviously, I've got comment. This is very near and dear to me, and so on. The change to E1 with the not visible is obviously good, and I like the measurement standard. I actually think that's probably tougher than what we originally wrote, and probably more appropriate for our town. I still like having the detail that's in the non-abbreviated version, realizing that that's already shorter than the July 1 version. I do like that, but the way it's written and the general inclusion that was written in E1, I still support the abbreviated version if that's the way the group wishes to go. I think this is really, it still meets the intent that was brought forth months and months and months ago and does it in a fairly clean way. So I don't really have any negative comment at all. I very much appreciate all the effort in this. I saw John raise his hand earlier. Did you have a question or did you have a comment that you want to include?
I was looking at your exemptions. See, are you guys sure you want to point out a specific business as being exempt?
Can we go back to the exemptions, man? You have to see, it doesn't matter which version you've got. Which one are you looking at, John?
C11.
We noticed that.
I think that's probably a very good idea. If you want to exempt some businesses, I would exempt the fire district businesses and just leave it at that.
The intention behind that was for the lighting on the pier, on the pier itself, that is somewhat historic and not historic, but significant and a sign of the town. That was the original intent behind that. Because those lights and being able to see the lights and see the pier at night is almost a signature of Curry Beach. And so that was why that exemption was in there. It may need to be cleaned up because it did not really mean to intend the pier house and everything else, but I can see how you're seeing that as very, very open-ended.
Yes.
But my intention when we first wrote this was to not take away the look of the signature item of Curry Beach, right? So that was why that was there. Thank you for bringing that up. It's a good point.
How would we change that? Because to me, the pier is the pier, and that's not a pier house. The pier is the structure that goes out into the water by definition.
Right.
So I guess my question would be, how is it violating the ordinance right now?
The light source is visible from residential areas.
And it's more than 40 watts.
And you can see it. You can see the source.
Yeah.
And would we be opening ourselves up for other businesses saying, wait, I'd like to apply. I'd like to get my list on there, too. Why did you just do it here?
So. I don't think it really fits into the parameter of the ordinance at all. It's talking about measuring that light level at the property line and different things like that.
I don't have a problem with calling it the pier. If they put it on the pier house, and it would, you know, if there's a light on the pier house right there at the end of the road, then you have the 0.2 candlelight requirement,
which isn't into a residential property.
I think John's point that by definition there's no property line 2 feet over for that light to be, right? It's like, why even bring it up? Why put it in there?
Maybe you have, Mr. Attorney, but I can't think of a single ordinance that specifically points out a business that says they're exempt from that ordinance.
Okay. No, I can go either way.
In Paramount Beach or Southport or anywhere else, any of the ordinances I've researched over the years.
I'm fine with removing that. I just didn't want to see it become an issue to where the whole thing got shut down because we were going to affect a signature item, that's all.
Yeah. That's my whole point. Yeah. That's all I was saying.
But also, where would the light violate a property line?
I'm just thinking, if you're in one of the residential houses, it's a block down, and you're looking out, and you see a big bright light that's on the end of the pier, and then you complain that you can't have a light, but there's a big bright light out on the end of the pier.
I can make text amendment.
All right, so is there any other discussion? All right, so we have two proposals right here. One is abbreviated and one is the non-abbreviated.
And we've got the peer issue.
And we got the peer issue. But what I would assume that if we make a motion, we would make it subject to the peer issue. So probably the best thing, I mean, how about if we just do a straw poll before we take a motion? I'll tell you, I'm inclined to do the abbreviated version. I think it's simpler.
I agree.
Okay. So then I would make a motion to approve the abbreviated version subject to removal of number 11, Kiri Beach Pier, and that we send this to town council with the approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Second.
Okay, we got a second. We have any further discussion on this? Okay, very quickly, this would not be included on Mondays. Would this be included on Mondays, council? It would be. Okay, well, good. Moves it forward. Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Very good. Okay.
Thank you.
I honestly, with the break, next item is prohibited uses. I haven't done anything more on prohibited uses. Yeah,
I did add to it today. It's too late to be included in today's agenda items, but as I brought up in July, I had a list to add to it, which I added today.
And that list is still alive. We can still get down to it.
So the recommendation is that now that we've got kind of several things we've been dealing with out of the way, I think now we can turn our attention back to prohibited uses. So let's go ahead and, you know, table that item with the idea that let's all try to make an effort to address that next. All right, the last item is the discussion of the applicants for the alternate position. So does anybody want to start on that? I mean, I'll go ahead and start. I think, you know, we've had a number of very good applicants. I mean, the two that are still here clearly are very strong applicants with a different perspective. My personal opinion, just simply because of the background of working with town council and the very kind comments he made about the importance of planning and zoning and having worked with a number of the issues here, I would recommend Mr. Dugan for the alternate position. But that's, I mean,
well,
certainly, you know,
I second that. I think the other people have great qualifications, but when I went, one of the things that the council looked at was how many years people live here, and they thought when it was invested, that was better. And so with the council experience, that's a double thing. So I would second that.
It's difficult. Two very good candidates here, which is a great thing for our group and our town, and shows that people care. I have to lean the same way, but I also want to encourage Beth to continue with chasing down other opportunities, because this is a town that is very much dependent on volunteers, and there are a lot of committees and groups that you can get started in. Myself, I started with the Shoreline and Beach Access group and got to learn a lot about the town and the workings of it before I was able to join the Planning and Zoning Commission. So while I am inclined to go with Mr. Dugan for this position as my recommendation, I really strongly recommend that you stay engaged with the town. I think you've got some skills that would definitely benefit us all, even though it's not just yet.
Tony?
I was very torn between the two, and I really came down to having somebody with a new perspective, and I was leaning heavily toward Beth. And that was the only reason. Just a different perspective, mm-hmm. a new set of eyes to what's going on.
And I do appreciate that too. That was very strong in my thought process.
And it's not taking away anything from Jim or anybody else. It's just right. that was for, you know, I had to make a decision.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And I do feel like both candidates are highly qualified, would both be very welcome on this commission. But in gratitude for so many years of service to the town, I'd like to see Jim Dugan join our commission.
Okay. So before we make a formal motion to recommend one of the candidates, again, you know, just to reiterate that, you know, there are a lot of opportunities to serve the town, and the town is, you know, certainly appreciative of any sort of contribution I think that the citizens can bring to the town committees and town commissions. So I'll go ahead and make a motion that we recommend Mr. James Dugan to fill the position for the planning and zoning alternate position.
I'll second.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, very good. So that passes. All right, I believe that is it, isn't it?
Next meeting day.
Yes. Let's go ahead and talk about, do we want to change our October meeting or keep it for the first Wednesday as normal? Let's see, what date is that?
October 7th.
Okay, the only reason I'm bringing that up is given our discussion about the architect, and if we maybe want to push that to the second week versus the first week to give them an opportunity to get us the material prior to our meeting.
If you took September 22nd as day one, do you have 3 weeks to get?
No,
would it push it further back?
No, that would be the 21st. Giving them 3 weeks to do the work
would be the middle of.
Yeah, it would be the 21st. Would be the first Wednesday after that 3 weeks.
Well, it should be.
They get it the 28th of September.
Okay, and
the
5th, then.
The 12th. I'm sorry, I'm off one.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, the 21st, yeah.
It would be, and then that would mean we would miss the opportunity to bring anything up to council if we were to propose it.
And I think during our discussion, we said that it would go in November.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm fine with either. I would propose that we just get back on schedule and go to the 7th if we need to do something special.
Well, we talked about a special meeting. Yeah.
Then we can call a special meeting.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So we don't, if that's the consent of the council, okay. So, I mean, we don't have to make any motion on that because that's a regular time.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
All right, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, all in favor say aye. Okay,
aye.
Good. Okay, so I've got